Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, I'm joined by friends and colleagues Brett Hornig and Leah Yingling to provide in-depth analysis, commentary, and predictions for the competition at the 2023 Javelina 100, which is about a week away. Before we get started, though, thank you to NAC for sponsoring this show. NAC has a special deal for Single Track listeners where you can head over to their website, NAC.com, that's spelled N-A-A-K.com, and use code SINGLETRACK15 in all caps at checkout to get 15% off your next order. If you're looking for recommendations in the process, the three products that I have been jamming with most often lately on my runs are their salted soup drink mix, the watermelon drink mix, and their sweet potato purees. They've also just got a helpful website in general. There's a section dedicated to ultra runner recipes. They've got hydration-based, race day-based, and recovery-based nutritional guides, and there's a bunch more. So go check them out. Again, that's NAC.com, and the code is SINGLETRACK15 to get 15% off your next order. With that, let's get on to the show. All right, it's great to be back. We have another preview episode, our first since UTMB and our first as a whole team together, I believe since Canyons in April, so that is awesome. Leah, we got to start with you because you've been on this awesome ride living a version of the pro trail running dream. Talk about that.
Yeah, I took a leave of absence from work at the end of July, July 29th to be exact, so kind of an open-ended leave of absence. I told my work 3 months and they said we can do up to 6 months. So it's been nice. My 3 months is October 29th, which is fast approaching. So I'm definitely not going back at the end of 3 months, but leaning a little bit more towards probably beginning of next year. So, I mean, it's been such a great opportunity. I think due to the leave, I've been able to spend, 3 weeks out in Europe before UTMB, getting on the course a lot before then, and then just learning how to relax a little bit. And that's been nice. I feel like we also haven't been home at the same time. Like, I talk about relaxing, I talk about routine, and I have had not as much of that as I'd like. So I think this is our first full week at home probably since July, which has been really nice. Our cat is happy.
Before you said 3 to 4 months, I thought you were going to say way less. And I was going to reference the best I can do is pawn shop meme, with 1 month. but anyways, that's awesome that you, that your work was so supportive. We are doing this preview episode right now for the Javelina 100, and, you're working double time. You're also going to be a part of the media team on the ground there on race day. So talk about that too.
Yeah, I'm super excited for it. I was able to take part in the Run Rabbit live stream with Aravapa about a little over a month ago. And that was a beast. I mean, I think some of the live streams I've participated in so far have been of the 100K variety where you start in the morning and you're done by the evening. But Run Rabbit was a freaking marathon. Like, we pulled near all-nighters. We're up doing finish line interviews for a solid 8 hours. We covered the top 10 men and women, which I'm such a huge fan of, but I think from a live stream perspective, you really recognize the work that entails and the time it entails to really do the women's coverage the justice that it deserves. So I think to date, and Mike and I have had a lot of conversations about this, I think Run Rabbit was some of the best coverage we've been able to give women on a live stream to date. And I'm really proud of that. But yeah, it was hard.
One of my favorite, two of my favorite moments from that live stream. One was your finish line interviews. They were excellent. Loved the one with Tara Dower in particular. Second, I think you guys will all get this because we all know Jimmy Elam well. There was this moment, I think it was around mile 50. The live stream cameras were pointed towards downtown Steamboat. Dave and Jimmy, Dave Stevens, are 1-2. They get caught at a traffic light. Seems like it's going forever. Jimmy goes into this classic squat to start to stretch the legs. It's sort of like an iconic move he does. And prior to that, I had told Jules, because we were watching it together, and I was like, I bet you $5 Jimmy goes into the squat at the light. And she's like, what are you talking about? And lo and behold, he did it, and they got the shot. And so, I don't know, maybe a bit of inside baseball there, but I found that hilarious and cool that just the live stream caught some of these more interesting nonverbal moments. Brett, you are not only helping us preview this race, you're also racing this race. And I think you were the wise person that once told me that to do a 100-miler well, First, you got to get your legs to cooperate at the distance, and then you got to start thinking about injecting speed. So was last year the cooperation year and this is the speed year?
Last year was the cooperation year. This year wasn't supposed to happen because I said if I had a great race, I would never do it again. And I had a great race, and then I was like, I'm never doing this again. And now it's very much like getting the body to cooperate again. And I'm now realizing I don't think the speed part's all that important. I think that's what I learned this year. It's like when you get into like true 100-mile specificity, I guess any specificity, but especially for like 100 miles. And, you know, I think we learned a lot about that sort of specificity this year, watching, you know, some of the bigger events across the globe, that people are getting just more specific with their training. And a lot of it is like more miles, like more volume, less of that speed work. And I mean, that's who seems to be winning these races. So I haven't really changed much from last year. Even signed up super late, like last minute, just like last year too. So maybe it'll be all right. But yeah, I mean, I did have plans to do media stuff. Sorry, Leah.
That's fine.
Then the running just started to turn out all right. And then it was like, you know, let's go run 5 laps in the desert.
We're probably going to talk more about it in the preview episode, but let the record show as well that we may be talking right now, right at this moment, to the second ever winner of this race from Ashland, Oregon. How about that?
Yeah, it would take a few. I mean, then it would just be, well, he only won it once.
I don't know. I saw Hal Kerner was also on that entrance list, so I think...
Dude, Hal's fit right now, too. he's been running. I know he's been running healthy. He's been doing the Dakota Jones a little bit too. He rode his bike like 108 miles the other weekend, all in the rain. And then we all worked a race, doing aid station stuff. So I was like, damn, go HK.
Well, I'm stoked about this race for many reasons. I think the biggest one, or at least one of the biggest ones that sticks out to me, is just how it's able to strike a really interesting balance. Like, on the one hand, you got the Hoka sales and marketing activations going on. You got the athlete managers running around, and that's all cool. And then on the other hand, you've got Jubilee Page, the race director, standing there on the grandstand in all these costumes, leading this Burning Man Halloween party-esque race for the sport. And that's so cool too. And I don't know, like, I think there's a bit of hope in it for me. Like, we've been talking a lot in the past about how there's one pole, which is UTMB. There's another pole, which is your mom and pop grassroots local race. And Javelina finds a way to deliver both experiences. They sort of navigate right down the middle. And so I'm excited to be a part of that again, because not to get too Buddhist here, but I think Javelina proves there is a middle way. What is it for you though, Leah? What gets you stoked?
Yeah, I actually have never been to Javelina, so I'm really excited to experience it. I've heard so much about the energy that's there, and I 100% agree with you that it's a little bit of something different than what we've been used to all summer long, for example. And I think what excites me the most is it attracts a slightly different style of runner than, I mean, what we've just seen all summer long as well. So different from the UTMB style runner, even though we're seeing a lot of people, like some people, I guess, dabble in both those types of races. I think Javelina is a little bit different in that we see some other runners come out of the woodwork and have success here that we might not see at some of our more mountainous races.
Yeah, I mean, Javelina is so fun. And I think it's kind of one of the, it's fun for everybody. You know, like a point-to-point 100 mile is really fun for the runner. It's not very fun for the crew or anyone else who has to support that person. But for this race, it's like 5 laps, all the crew is at the start and finish line. It's all in the same spot. They're there the whole day. And that might seem then like the runner makes a sacrifice because now they have to do 5 20-mile loops. But getting to experience that kind of energy every few hours actually makes it really fun. And like, I didn't have any problems with the loop at all in terms of it being boring or anything. And the other thing too is like, they're able to dial in the logistics of the live stream so much better, where they're like, Javelina is one of the perfect spots to put on like a world-class production for people to watch the race who aren't there. And, you know, I think, yeah, it definitely does cater to a certain type of runner, because it's, you know, you're running every single step. But it does kind of almost like open up this possibility for, you know, more loop courses that can create a bigger production, because it's just so hard to do for a mountainous 100 mile.
Are you partial to the loop course idea these days, or are you still like a fan of those point to point and lollipop type courses?
I think they both have their purpose. I mean, I think from the runner standpoint, and like enjoyment of nature and such, you know, 100 miles point to point is, you know, or a big 100 mile loop, that's where it's at. But if we're looking at it in terms of like, what's the best way for fans to watch an elite field, you know, throw down for 100 miles, I'm all for the loop course. You know, like I always thought, I was like, wow, if they ever did some sort of ultra marathon in the Olympics, every host city could make a 10K trail-ish loop and do 10 of those laps.
Yeah.
Logistically, it's way easier. And then they could put together such a more complete production. And, you know, as we've seen with so many weird ass sports out there, like, you know, like I'm sure we've all watched the cornhole championships on ESPN. And it's like, we're watching people throw beanbags into a hole, but the way that they put the production on makes it very exciting. And it's like, okay, if you can make a good story out of anything, like you could definitely do it out of running a few extra laps.
Yeah. And I think from like, I mean, I'm speaking from experience, consuming the live stream last year, I wasn't able to be there, but I was able to be on a plane. That was a 10-hour flight.
I remember that.
And it was awesome. I mean, we got the high speed internet on that flight and we were able to watch like the entire race almost. And like, I think Brett, we were able to see your finish, but it was engaging the whole time, like between having the tracker that was about halfway through the loop and then having people live streaming there and then live streaming at the base. I mean, there was always something going on. So I think some qualms with live stream content at times is there's a lot of downtime. Fields aren't getting equal coverage. I think a looped course like this allows for both of those problems to really be addressed.
Do you know, Leah, like where your assignment is? Like, are you going to be in Tent City? Are you going to be mixing it up at Jackass Junction and the ranch? Do you know yet?
I'm not positive yet. I'm assuming one of those and I'll likely stay stationary. And I know Zach Marion will be out there as well. And I think perhaps another like on course correspondent as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that'll be cool. And Brett, the idea of the Olympics, like a course in every city is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, it could be an urban ultra. Could be sweet.
One more thing that I wanted to cover before we get into more of like the course and weather discussions is the context of this race, which I know we've talked a bit about last year. We've kind of talked at times in other arenas, but to me, this is a really interesting thing. And there's three things I want to say. First, Javelina is a rare example of an older classic race that has actually kept innovating. It's increased its relevancy over the years. Two, I think it's gotten to the point where it's very clearly replaced the TNF 50 in San Fran as the premier late-ish season race slot. And third, you know, none of this is set in stone. Like it's got a lot of surprising event competition to deal with when you think about Kodiak, which could very well become the next UTMB America's major, Run Rabbit Run, which just happened, Cape Town, where Leah, you and Mike and Caleb and many other elites are headed next month, the Golden Trail World Series Finals, the fact that there's always shakeups every year in the Golden Ticket Series, there's just so much more. And I mean, it's just so cool to think about. And, you know, you see Jamil and Matt and Jubilee and the team putting all these awesome systems and innovations like the live stream into place. And you pair that with, the spectator friendly loop concept that Brett mentioned. And it's just going to be cool to see this play out over the next few years. But yeah. I've been yapping for too long. I think we should talk about this though. Leah, how do you think about Javelina in all this context?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on this time of year with running. I think, you know, we had all the hype from July and August, like continue pretty decently into September this year with, you know, all the kind of grassroots 100 milers that have been around for a while, Wasatch, Bear, we saw like Run Rabbit, a decent amount of competition get drawn there, and then Grindstone 100, but then the addition of the Golden Ticket race and the 100K there, that took some competition too. So I think we're still seeing it a little bit dispersed. I know we were chatting offline before this about like the level of competition in Javelina this year.
Yeah.
And I do think, yeah, it's not completely dense to Javelina by any means, despite it being a golden ticket race. I will say like, and there's other golden ticket races out there that are way less dense than Javelina is. Like, I don't think Nice on the women's side was in particular the deepest race. I don't think Thailand's going to be the deepest race either. So there's a lot going on. And like, even actually looking at the entrance list, I was thinking back to how many of these runners were at something like CCC. There's actually a runner that was at Grindstone that we'll get into as well, but yeah. Not a ton of people doubling back from any of those UTMB races coming into this. So it's like, it's got to be a runner at the beginning of the season or like middle of the season that says, okay, I'm committing to Javelina, and that's what they're doing. So yeah, pretty interesting there.
And I also forgot about Grand Raid. Like, as we speak, Katie Scheid is challenging Courtney DeWalter's course record there. Cami Brias is out there. There's a fairly deep men's field as well. Like, there's just so many. I always forget in the fall, there's still, even though it's the end of season, so many things. Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I guess Javelina does have a few things going for it, being a golden ticket race. I mean, we've seen one, and I'm sure we'll go over the numbers, like the golden ticket effect of, you know, the depth of the competition of being a golden ticket race, at least in the US. And then kind of like how Leah had said, it's a flatter 100. So it does cater to a slightly different runner, or it can at least, because all the big races that just got listed are all still mountainous or verdy kind of ultras. And this is one of the opportunities to get in a relatively quick flatter 100. So yeah, it does make for a very interesting field. But you know, I think that's one of the reasons where like Javelina has kind of been able to solidify itself into that slot of kind of this unique, what is late summer, early fall kind of race. The other thing too that I was looking at was it is now one of only 2 100-mile races that's a golden ticket race, with the other one being Doi Intanon in Thailand, because there was those two plus UTMB, but it's now mostly 100Ks with just these two. So it's one of the only opportunities to run 100-mile and qualify for Western States, which even though it's a faster one, you still do have to cover 100 miles of distance, which adds a unique variable as well.
To add some really interesting data from Aid Station Fireball to that golden ticket depth effect that you mentioned, Brett, so since 2021, in tandem with this Golden Ticket Association, a couple things. A, we've seen significant new men's and women's course records. B, we've seen notable reductions in spread across the podiums and top 10s on both sides. On the women's side, it's dropped from 5-hour to sub 2-hour spread averages. On the men's side, it's dropped from 2-hour to sub 30-minute spread averages. And C, the performance demands for golden tickets have gotten tougher. So on the women's side, you should realistically expect to run sub 1530 for a ticket. And on the men's side, it's sub 1330. So these are significant changes, and they're really based on one single variable change. And I find that so fascinating.
I had this conversation the other day, and somebody brought up to me that they felt like Javelina wasn't a good golden ticket race for Western States. And like, I disagree, because I do think it's a good course for, you know, some of the topical cooling things, some of the flatter, faster miles. And the fact that I mentioned early on, it attracts a slightly different runner. I mean, I think it attracts a very similar runner to Black Canyon, but slightly different than some of the other races. So like, I disagree with it not being a good golden ticket race. But then when you read those results, it's pretty interesting and contrasting to me, because I would expect these runners to have a little bit more success at Western States than we've seen them have.
And Leah, I remember you saying something about this in our last year's preview episode. I could be paraphrasing, but like, because of what's involved from a heat management standpoint and just other course demands, Javelina really rewards these like scientific runners or runners that care more about precision. Talk more about that.
Yeah. I had some fun looking into some of the splits from each lap. From last year as well for some of the runners. And I think the fact that it's a looped course also plays into the fact that it might favor some of these more like scientific thinkers because they're thinking more about like, okay, what do I want these like each lap's pace to be? And like, I might not want this to differ too much from lap 3 to lap 4 to lap 5. And like somebody like Brett last year, his splits were really fun to look into for those last 3 laps, because I don't think he varied more than 10 minutes on each of those laps from like 3 to 5, for example. Maybe his second one was a little speedy, but 3 to 5 were all pretty consistently within 10 minutes. And I think that's what we see with some of the most successful runners here, is being a little bit more precise about their pacing. And it really pays off on especially laps 3, 4, and 5. But also with like cooling and nutrition, it's so much easier to have a game plan whenever you're seeing your crew very consistently. And you can almost expect like, okay, in 2 hours, I'm going to see them. I'm going to get X, Y, and Z. I know I'll be good until this aid station. Rinse and repeat. Let's do it again. So I think it really lends itself to some of those people who control the controllables really well.
On that note of like the value in seeing your crew off, and this is something I was just talking with Brett about off on, or maybe it was in our pre-race interview, but it was sort of the possible pitfalls there and how the little things like these meetups get super amplified and add up time. And if you're not super efficient in such a fast 100 mile, you're going to pay the price. And yeah, I find that fascinating. And like Brett, in your case, I have to imagine that reducing stoppage time this time around, because there was a fair bit of it last year, that's going to be one of the biggest ways you're going to run faster this year. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That and like poop less.
Easier said than done.
I know. I hope that happens or doesn't happen, but like there's not much I can do at this point. One thing that's interesting about Javelina, and I'm sure it's reflective in the lap splits as well, whereas like Leah, like you said, you kind of have to be pretty good at internally pacing at Javelina because it's flat, and you can be running a minute a mile faster than your 100 mile pace on that day should be. It will still feel stupidly easy. How are you supposed to know? And it's not like, you know, your watch's live pace is going to be really that accurate. It's like you have to have a pretty good internal just kind of clock in terms of your pacing. This is also a course where it's not really a blow up and rally kind of course, because it's very much flat. You know, in the mountains, you kind of see like, oh, I totally blew up on this climb. But then once I started to descend, you know, the heart rate came down, I used some different muscles, everything kind of reset. I feel like there's not much of resetting at this course. That's like you're point. Either, mm-hmm. and we see it kind of in the stats too, where it's like, there's always a group in the front. Some of them drop out. They never come back. And then those who are just in the front end up winning the race because it's very much, and like that's how, that's reflective of how like a major marathon works too.
I don't think we have the stats for it right now, but it would be fascinating for future races, especially in these larger races, to see if it's possible to measure, call it resurrection or what that looks like on these more like blow up positive courses, you know?
Like who can fall back stat. The most places and then come back?
Come back.
the Ludo stat.
The Ludo stat, yeah.
But yeah, any other thoughts to add, Leah?
Yeah, I mean, I was just doing some calculations today about like, okay, what does it take? So right around 13 hours won the race last year on the men's side. And that pace is 7:48 pace. And like part of me would just love to see somebody like Matt Daniels go out at 7:48 pace from the gun and just like see what that looks like and feels like for somebody like him, for example, who, you know, like going out conservative. I would just be so excited to see what a race like that looks for him. But it's nearly impossible in a race like Javelina, where that front group goes out hot and you want to stay with them, because like Brett mentioned, it's like a marathon, and oftentimes it's somebody from that lead pack that ends up winning the race. So you really don't want to take that risk. As much as I'd love to see it, we don't see any of those. Yeah.
One thing
being one that way.
One thing that I did think of last year that I feel like I've changed my mind a little bit on this year is the evenness of pacing on like lap 1 versus laps 2, 3, and 4. I feel like you average 7:45 pace to win the race, but that's a over the course of an entire day where the temperature goes from like 55 up to 85 and then back down. That like 7:45 average effort in lap one could very well be like 7:15 or 7:20 pace, which I didn't think that. I thought that was dumb last year, but then after being it, I was like, my first lap's probably going to be the fastest because you start in the dark. It takes 90 minutes for the sun to come up. It's barely even hot by the end of the first lap. So it's like, well, at that effort in that weather, it's like, okay, the 100, it's probably going to be a little bit quicker. And then you hold that same effort for laps 2, 3, and 4, the pace is going to slow a little bit because your systems are now cooling and getting into all that stuff.
That's a good point.
I don't think it should be like 6 minute pace though. That's still dumb.
Thanks to Rabbit for sponsoring this show. In celebration of the Javelina 100, Rabbit is offering a special promotion for single track listeners only. Use promo code Javelina20 in all caps for 20% off your next online order between today, October 21st and October 29th. Anyone who makes a purchase with this promo code will also receive a special gift with their order. So go to runninrabbit.com to check out their brand new apparel just in time for fall, including the new High Country Flannels, Low Light Collection, and more. One thing to note, if you're listening to this episode after October 29th, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next order as well, although it does not come with a special gift. With that, let's get back to the show. Brett, you said something to this effect at the top of the conversation that I forgot to follow up on. And Leah, this is for you too, but like when you're studying the fields for these races, are you looking more for evidence of speed and turnover in their training or more of like steady running and a lot of volume? Talk about that.
One thing that I feel like I looked through probably, you know, when we, men's and women's preview, I probably poked through like 50 different Stravas. I feel like there's more Strava dark people this year than last year. Like it's there's trending. A lot of like almost obviously incomplete training blocks. So there's not like, I feel like I don't have as big of a pool to pull from last year. I don't really know what people are doing.
I know. I was kind of happy when it was coming down to the wire for preparing for this episode. When I'd get to somebody that was Strava dark, I was like, oh, too bad. Makes it easier for us.
Moving on.
Yeah, I agree. Some other points that I was thinking about is like when I'm thinking about this race, I'm thinking about like two parts. Like, is somebody a 100-mile veteran? If yes, I think their level of success definitely goes up in a race like Javelina. I believe on the women's side, the last time a 100-mile debut runner won the race was in 2016, and it was Dana Anderson. And then on the men's side, it was 2018, Dave Stevens. And so that's still been a while. That's about 5 years. And I think both of those were pre-golden ticket era. So I'm wondering too, like with it being a golden ticket race, like is it still going to be favoring these 100-mile veterans? Yeah. I think yes. So that's largely one thing that I think might be an indicator of success in a race like Javelina. Another thing is like just so much runnable running I'm seeing across the board. Like not a lot of people that are really mixing it up with any vert, really. Like nobody's putting in much mountains whatsoever. So that's interesting. I do think mountains build resilience, but I think for Javelina, Brett, you could probably speak to this a little bit better. I'm sure it beats you up a little bit each lap. So having some kind of like versatility in your training probably still is important.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I mean, the second half of every lap is slightly downhill. Like it is. There's some miles where you actually drop like almost 100 feet. Like that's not flat. And if you're overstride it and, you know, cook that a little bit too hard, like it's, you can still very much blow your quads on a, you know, 8 mile descent that drops a couple hundred feet. Maybe even if you don't blow your quads, you lose a lot of that climbing power the first half of the next lap, because, you know, it's the opposite. Like the first half of every lap, you are running slightly uphill, and the more tired you get, the steeper that hill gets.
Talking more about the heat, and this is another aid station fireball stat around the impact of heat on the course. If you look at historical course records, this is super surprising. They've occurred in both years that are hotter and cooler. Like oppressive heat doesn't seem to rule this stuff out. Obviously, Dakota had a great run last year, went sub 13 in relatively cooler temps. But like, if you look at the year Zach Bitter won and set a course record, the year Pat Reagan won and set a course record, they were both set in higher temp years in the low to mid 90s. Does that surprise either of you all as well?
I guess I didn't know that. And I hadn't really thought about it until you said it out loud now. maybe it just goes to show how good that 2017 1301 really was. Mm-hmm. It does say in the Aid Station Fireball notes, lightly cloudy. An ever so slight protection from the sun when it's 90 out. That helps a lot. There was zero clouds last year.
I saw the high was like 82 degrees Fahrenheit last year, which is warm, but it probably feels excessively warm whenever there's no cloud cover.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like last year had to have felt better. Like an 82 and sunny has to feel better than a 91 and lightly cloudy. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe that 1301 from 2017, if that Pat Reagan runs it in 2022, maybe the course record's even a little bit faster.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, there's one more Aid Station Fireball stat line that I have to throw out about the typical podium runner profile. And from what I see here, there doesn't actually seem to be one. It's only when you get into the course record holders, with the lone exception of Dakota Jones on both the men's and women's sides, that you start to see that historically these like course record holders have come from flatter track road ultra backgrounds. So like one of the big takeaways here is like, if you're looking for a course record, it's probably going to come from someone like Camille Herron, someone like Pat Reagan, the Zach Bitter types. But when you're talking about overall podiums and just standard, like quote unquote, normal year wins, it's anybody's ball game. And I find that really interesting as well.
Yeah, you know, I think on the women's side, I would argue it's almost always a flat, fast runner. Like it's Casey, it's Nicole Bitter, it's Camille, Devin, Riley, and then Heather Jackson makes up the 10th time on that list. It's almost like pretty predictable names for those who would have success here. So yeah. I think even when I kind of went through my ladies' field, it favors that way again, because I feel like it's hard not to.
Another bit of cool data to share, and we've talked about this a lot, but if you zoom out to the entire ultra scene, we're quickly realizing that you basically have to be in it from the gun, and these races don't really start like 50K or 50 miles or 100K in. For Javelina, the data shows it's no different. 2022 was an outlier year where we saw Dakota take the lead on the fifth lap, Devin took it on the fourth lap to win, but in almost every other year besides that, since 2010, the winning move has been made within the first three laps on the men's side. And on the women's side in that same time frame, we've seen six wire-to-wire wins. So it's really interesting. What do you guys think? Like, do you think that this like from the gun type move should still inform strategy? Is it a year-to-year thing? Brett, what do you think about these contention stats?
Well, one thing that I think was in these stats, but we might have talked about it as well, is like, some of the wire-to-wire wins, or some of the people who were like in the lead and then eventually won, they had a group of people around them and they all dropped out. Because there are we saw that last year too, where like there, I thought I was in like 15th place and then I finished lap two and they're like, you're in fourth. I'm like, where did everybody go? And then they're like, people just dropped out or are like sitting in the aid stations already. So, I think it's, again, but it still goes down to the, like, you kind of, if you're trying to win this race, you kind of just need to be like up there. One of the cool things though about this race that's different from almost any other trail race I've done, you can see super far in front of you because it's like a little rolling, but it's like for the most part, like a big circle. And I was able to see, like Arlen last year was wearing a very bright colored t-shirt and I could see him like, you know, a mile in front of me at times and was like, oh, okay. And like, I could see the front pack and was still able to gauge, like making sure I'm like still there. And I was like, okay, I don't need to be like trying to actively surge. I can see they're all right there and we're all still going the same speed. You don't get that luxury in a trail race where it's like, you're either right on their back or they're gone.
Awesome. Okay. Some final relevant data points to share for race positioning, starting with the men here competing for the win. All of this data, by the way, is in the context of lap one at Javelina. You've got to be within 5 minutes of the leader on lap one if you want to win, within 15 minutes if you want a shot at the podium, and within 40 minutes if you want a shot at top 10. On the women's side, it's within 10 minutes if you want to win, within 40 minutes if you want podium, and within 150 minutes if you want top 10. So on both sides, maybe slightly less early on the women's side, you got to be in it early. You got to be in the mix. Yeah. Any other thoughts there before we get into the women's preview?
What did I have written down? I think, yeah, I mean, we kind of did talk about, like, you know, some of the keys to success of this race. You know, I think some of the like bits of what does make, cause we've talked about like why this race is so fast, but there are definitely still some challenging elements of this course. Like what does make this race challenging? I think one of the biggest challenges is it's all running. It's, you know, if at any point you're hiking, you're probably like on the verge of blowing up. You know, it's one of those races where like, it's 100 miles where you probably won't sit down the entire time, which it can definitely be a challenge. There's zero shade on the course, which even at like Western states, even after the middle part of the course caught on fire, there's still shade out there. This one was like full on. The only time you're in the shade is when you're under a tent canopy. So the sun, like the direct sunlight, it just kind of slowly wears you down because you can't escape it and there's nothing you can do about it. And then the last thing I had written down is, I think some of the, like the crux of the course we always tend to talk about is like, I don't know if there's really any single crux of the course here, but the thing I'd written down was just not slowing down on laps 2, 3, and 4. You know, like Leah had said about my lap splits, I really wasn't sure if I was going to get complimented or roasted.
I never roast you.
You're right, though. I cooked the second lap a little bit too hot. And I remember because I passed Johnny Ray like coming into Jackass Junction. Huge mistake, turns out.
You were in show up or blow up mode.
I was. And then, yeah, and then laps 3 and 4 were like very tough. And I was definitely started to bleed a little bit of time, but I think, you know, and I'm sure looking at like John Ray's or Dakota splits or even Devin's, I bet laps 2, 3, and 4 of the winners are some of the most steady, steady run, middle laps.
So, actually any final thoughts on like core strategy, Leah, or anything of that sort before we get into it?
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to touch on that we really haven't talked about yet was the mental game that is required for a race like Javelina. Like a 5-loop course doesn't exactly serve most people well mentally the longer it goes on. So I feel like being able to have good mental strategies, staying in tune with your body, with your thoughts, and like staying engaged in the race and like not losing sight of that when the going gets tough, I think is extremely valuable in a race like Javelina. Like I could already picture myself if I ever run Javelina, just like dreading certain sections on each loop. So just trying to stay like as positive and like having positive associations with each section of each loop to try to keep it fresh, engaging, and fun. I think that's really important.
Yeah. You got to play some mind games for sure.
All right. I have to throw out, I have to throw out a 2022 joke to bring us into the women's preview. Do we have any Marshawn Lynch-esque, I'm just here so I don't get fined runners this time around?
I don't think so. I mean, the only is Heather Jackson the only Hoka sponsored athlete
on women's side?
On the women's side for the 100 miles. So,
Nicole Manet, is she still with Hoka?
Cannot confirm nor deny. Yeah. But like Heather's very much said, like she's here to get a golden ticket and gain entry back into Western States. So it's not like I'm here because Hoka said I have to sort of thing. That was an all-time quote though. Bummer, we don't get to use it again this year.
Too bad.
But yeah, Leah, I guess we can probably get into like storylines, analysis, predictions. Lead us off. Where do you want us to begin with this field?
I want to begin at the top. Man, Ragnar DeBos is running. And
yeah, that's a nifty one.
That's a really cool one. So for any listeners who aren't familiar with Ragnar, she is just stellar world-class runner who's, I mean, been around since at least 2011, running ultras and trail races, 44 years old, third place at Western States back in 2021, and currently holds the master's record at Western States with a 17:41 in a pretty hot year. She's Whoa. Been a world champion at the World Mountain Running Championships in 2018. I think maybe a bronze in 2016. Just like all around badass when it comes to mountain running. Wins at Trans Gran Canaria, Marathon des Sables, stage race. Like does it all and has been doing it all for many years. So I like to categorize my fields usually. And like one of my categories is typically like world class. And I think Ragnar is the only one in this field that really checks that world class box for me in terms of the level of performances that she's put out over the years. And I don't think Javelina is really going to be any different for her this year.
Question for you, Leah. Yeah. Does Ragnar have any results similar to a course like Javelina? Did I'd you come across like, any?
Not really. Like Western States, you know, running in the 17:40 range there, I would say is equivalent to running a sub 15 at Javelina. I mean, climate, Trans Gran Canaria, Marathon des Sables, desert. But in terms of like just the runnability, I would say no, but I also didn't like dissect the 2011 and onwards. I looked a little bit more at her last 5 years, and I don't think there's really much in the last 5 years besides Western States.
Fun fact, I think Ida Nielsen barely missed Ragnar DeBos's age record at Western States earlier this year.
Oh, it had to have been really close.
Yeah, I think it was like a couple minutes.
Yeah, dang. yeah, so that's kind of my only world-class runner in the field. Really excited to see what she's going to do. She's most recently coming off of third place at Ultra Pirineu. I think that was in September, 100K with 21,000 feet. And I don't think she had a great day there. I think some stomach issues and finished probably about 40 minutes behind the winner. But I think we're going to see her have a great day at Javelina. And I'm really excited to see her come back to Western States potentially. I'm assuming that's why she's running Javelina, because she wants another shot. And I love seeing the Western States top 10 especially get even more international and more competitive each year. And I think Ragnar would be a really, really interesting participant in that top 10, hopefully.
All right, so Ragnar rounds out the world-class category. What's the next one?
I've got my... Well, I think I'll just say this next one because it's such in like a large contrast. I've got two categories, my Javelina veterans and then my on the brink category. And my on the brinks are like on the brink of something big. So I'll go to my on the brink category next. And this includes Shay Aquilano and Tara Dower. So, and I'll talk about Shay next because she is half the age of Ragnar and she's fun to talk about. So Shay is 22 years old, just graduated college. Saw her have like pretty exceptional last year. She races a lot and is really consistent in the races she does. She doesn't exactly ever have big blowups. She's always in the mix. Never exactly like coming out on top in these competitive races, but with each competitive race that goes by, we see her inching her way up a little bit more each time. She was third place at JFK last year, sixth place at Black Canyon in 2023 here, and sixth place, but really close to fourth place there. So Ida Nielsen, Anna Cassius, and Shay were all within like 2 to 3 minutes of each other. And that would have put her potentially like one spot out of a golden ticket there. So I know she'd like to get a golden ticket. This will not be her first 100 miler. She's run 1603 at the Indiana Trail 100 last year, right around this time. And that was her first 100 and broke course record. And I believe had the fastest debut in a 100 miler for any female last year in the US.
Wow.
Which is a really cool stat. And then I'll just touch on her training because I think it's some of the most interesting training I came across. That's something
yes.
I like for us to cover on these episodes is like, you know, a bonkers workout we saw or some just like training that you're like, whoa, I haven't seen training like that since 2010. So we'll get into it.
The segment is called Who is Your Coach?
Yeah. So I'll preface this with last year, I dug through her Strava a little bit. Last year when she ran her first 100 miler, she had this goal to hit 100 miles in 3 days over the course of a weekend and ended up doing it in 2 days instead, or I think she said 40 hours. And what did she do? She did a 50 miler one day followed by like 18, 22, and 10 the next day while training for her first 100 last year. So I saw that and I was like, oh, I wonder if she's doing something similar this year. Turns out she was. So this year she did it in 3 days instead. And she did a 50K at 7:03 pace in the morning, then ran 20 miles at sub-8 pace in the afternoon on the one weekend. And then I think a couple weekends ago, she did 40 miles in the morning, 10 at night, followed by a 20 and 13 the next day with 17 the morning after. So really interesting training that I haven't really seen replicated lately across, especially women. I don't think we see that. Sometimes we see kind of funky training on the men's side, but haven't seen anything like this in a while. So
it's like taking micro block to a whole new level. I feel like it needs that's too short of amount of time for a micro block. I think she just graduated up to nano block.
You know, and like, I mean, it worked for her last year for the Indiana Trail 100. She had a great result there. And I heard her on a Chasing Gold interview this afternoon talk about having a full-time job. I believe she works for Brooks as a perception researcher, which is really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think having a full-time job, you're probably not able to get in all the miles that like some other professional runners might be able to. She's unsponsored. And so I'm assuming like a lot of her training does come on the weekends and pretty unique way of getting miles in, but like, you know, it's worked for her. And I'm curious to see how that plays out in a race like Javelina.
If it works, I mean, shoot, keep doing it.
She probably came as close as you can get in training to simulating how you feel at like mile 85 or 90 in a race.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially and that's a hard thing to get to.
Yeah, and she does a lot of her miles on the flatter side. So that's like Brett talked about earlier. You're not like hiking any of those miles. You're consistently running them. So I think that is an added challenge too.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, I'll move on to my next on the brinker, which actually after Run Rabbit, I don't know if she's actually like on the brink anymore, but I do think a solid race at Javelina would really put her leverage her a little bit more than she already is. And that's Tara Dower, who I believe on her episode with you, Finn, said she's hoping to PR at Javelina. And she's run 16:58 at Umstead, and that's the time she's hoping to beat. And man, Tara's incredible. I mean, I've talked about her on and on the live stream.
Tara's awesome.
Run Rabbit. Yeah, but she hasn't been running ultras for very long. 2021 is when she came to the sport. And like at this point, I definitely call her a 100-mile specialist. Like she's got podiums at, man, like every 100 she's done. This will be her 9th 100 in 2 years. And yeah, all of which she's been on the podium for.
100 miles plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she set the FKT on the Colorado Trail this summer before that was taken a couple weeks later from her. But I think one of the most impressive things I've seen Tara do this year was not only was her epic finish at Run Rabbit, like she guts herself when she runs. Like she runs so hard, runs through the finish line, gets every ounce out of herself, which is super inspiring. But she paced Mike at Grindstone for a 10-mile section, I think like 2 weeks later. She hadn't really run yet. I think she did one run before this. And like she sprinted into this aid station at like 6-minute pace ahead of Mike. When I was going to take over pacing and I was like, there's no way you just did that. And I was like, that's impressive. You're in great shape. You're going to slay Javelina. I don't need to see anything else. So I did see something else, though. She ran a half marathon the week later at, like, she ran a 126 half marathon in Virginia Beach. So I think she knows what she's doing. She's coached by Carl Meltzer. I know he wants her to have a pretty specific, like, 100-mile focus this year and going into next year. And I think she's just getting better and better and knows how to execute really well. So really excited for Tara.
Leah, I think in this segment, you created a new runner label that could go viral with Brinker.
I don't know if I like that title.
Shouts to the best Disney movie on earth.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's my other category. My Brinkers. I'll go. Oh yeah, I did have one other category. So then I have my Javelina veterans, Riley Brady, Lauren Puritz, Heather Jackson. Riley, I'm really excited to see at Javelina. They seem extremely dialed and ready to go, and like their training's ramped up quite a bit compared to last year. Riley has, I believe, the third fastest time at Javelina behind Camille Herron and Devin Yanko, running just an exceptional race last year. I know they're trying to get back to Western States, so I do predict that Riley will be in the mix and knows how to execute Javelina, and I believe was one of the people, aside from you, Brett, that had beautiful splits for lap 3, 4, and 5. Yeah, last year Riley did 2:56 for lap 3, 2:57 for lap 4, 2:59 for lap 5. So
wow.
I think they're a tough one to beat.
Yeah, that's super legit. I mean, I think that's almost the same as my last 3 lap splits. So then
yeah.
I blew up then by that record.
So we've got the Javelina veterans, we've got the Brinkers, we've got the world class. Any other names that fit into these categories or any other categories that we should discuss?
Yeah, I've got my fasties. So this is my category with like 14-0-something 100 milers or people that I believe have like the 14-0 potential on like a flat course, for example. And that includes Steph Flippin, Nicole Monet, and Sarah Beal. This will be her first 100 miler, but I do believe she fits in that category with a course record at JFK last year. She recently moved to Boulder this past year. This is her fourth golden ticket start line. I know she had a great race at Canyons in 2022, and then I think DNF'd Bandera last year in 2020, the year I ran it. I don't even know. And then, yeah, Black Canyon DNF'd that this year. So I think Javelina is a great first 100 miler for her. She recently picked up Pat Reagan as a coach, and he's got a lot of Javelina specific experience as well. So very curious to see how she combines a lot of her road speed with a course like Javelina, and hopefully controlling a lot of the controllables, nailing her nutrition, staying cool, things like that. I think we'll see a great race out of her.
I got a few names that I think are interesting. There's three people registered that are registered for Javelina and Black Canyon already. So that seems like an obvious, like, golden ticket, double attempt, you know, just in case Javelina doesn't go well. And that's Shea Aquilano, Lauren Peretz, and Where did my last one go? Oh, Selena Langner, who that one, I've got Selena on kind of like dark horse watch. 16th at Black Canyon 100K this past year, but then since then 8th at Speed Goat and 3rd at Mammoth Trail Fest 50K. So it's like, while those are more mountainous races, I feel like those results have been trending in the correct direction. And like, you know, to an extent, fitness is fitness. The other name that I thought was interesting, or one that would probably be worth looking out for, is Lindsay Dwyer. I would say like very much 100 mile specialist, but you know, she's got wins at Burning River 100, Rio del Lago 100, and a sub 17 at the Yeti 100 this year, which was a course record by almost 3 hours. So it's like, yeah, and those are all like some of the more runnable hundreds. So I feel like Javelina very much fits into Lindsay Dwyer's like kind of lane of races. What do you got? Do you got any other names, Finn, that we've left off?
Yeah, just a couple notes about people we've already mentioned. I think one thing we can't overlook is the power of environment in terms of training and racing benefits. So, you know, Riley moved from Pennsylvania to Boulder in the last year. Sarah Beal moved from Ohio to Boulder in the last year. And I think those could be huge benefits to their training and racing at places like Hovland, just because you're surrounded by so much excellence and more people like you. So I think that's a big deal. And then Leah, I loved what you said about Shay and sort of like some of these exotic experimental types of training that she's done to get ready. And it reminds me, I talked with Heather Jackson earlier today, and one cool thing she's done, which also seems to be a bit experimental, is she'll do these 15 to 16 hour gravel bike races. And then the very next day she'll go out on a 3 to 4 hour run explicitly to simulate that feeling of being at mile 70, being at mile 80, being at mile 90 that you couldn't normally traditionally get in training on one go. So very curious to see how that works at a Javelina, especially given that this is her second go around. But yeah, no other new names, just sort of adding color to those top contenders. I think it's a fascinating field.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I'll just dive into two that I didn't get to go super deep into. But one is Nicole Monet, who ran 14:01 at Jackpot last year. She is a Hoka-sponsored athlete. Does typically like roads, track ultras as well. She did go to Canyons in 2021 as one of her first true trail ultras. I think Javelina will be a sweet spot for her. She was part of the gold medal team at the 100K Worlds last year on the roads. I think finishing 11th and running a 7:34 for 100K. That's 7:18 pace for a mile. Really incredible. And I feel like she and Steph Flippin are going to be pretty similar runners in this race. Nicole's coached by Pat Reagan. Steph used to be coached by Pat Reagan. She's now coached by Megan Roach. And Steph's got a 14:04 100 miler to her name. And then also another 14:34 and 14:35. These are at Jackpot and Tunnel Hill and races like that. And Steph started Javelina last year and unfortunately had to pull out with injury and spent a lot of the winter rehabbing it, getting back to full health. And I've been spending a lot of time with her this year. She's one of my teammates with Lululemon. I'll be pacing her out there as well. So a little conflict of interest, but I love Steph. She's going to do awesome. She's a phenomenal coach herself and just has a super great attitude. And I think she's looking at Javelina in that way too. So this will be her first 100 miler back in a couple years, but I think I have full confidence that, yeah, she'll be in the mix too, both her and Nicole.
Yeah. Javelina very much seems like a trail 100 that is like directly in Steph's lane in terms of what she has excelled at in the past and how this isn't very adjacent to that at all.
Totally.
Brett, since we can't get your picks on the men's side, can we get your picks to lead us off on the women's side?
Sure. Yeah. Are we going 5-3? I wrote 5.
Let's go 5.
I'll go 5. So to round out my top 5 in 5th place, I have Steph Flippin. I think she's going to have a nice first 100 back from injury. 4th, I've got Shay Aquilano. 3rd, I have Tara Dower. And then 2nd, I have Heather Jackson. You know, I think mostly like it was just last year where Javelina was Heather Jackson's first trail race and ultra. And she just went like full on into 100 mile, not too far after competing at Kona. So Heather's now at least 12 months into her short ultra running career, but I feel like she's learned quite a few things and didn't have to race Kona a couple weeks ago. So that's got to help. And then for the win, I have Riley Brady. I think Riley's going to, you know, take this one, especially with kind of all the things that you had said, Finn, of Riley moving, you know, over to Boulder and, you know, really going deeper into, you know, just upping the quality of training and kind of like the training lifestyle. I thought their pre-race interview with you was really good. You know, they said that they had made, you know, a pretty concerted effort to up the training volume and really lean into that a little bit more, and has been feeling great. You know, Leah, you had said that Riley had some of the most consistent lap splits. All of that seems to be trending towards a great race at Javelina, and especially with the fire of not having a great Western States race and really wanting to get back. So that's who I've got for the win. I don't think it will be in a course record. I think Camille Heron's course record is safe for another year.
For me, I've got Ragnar De Bots fifth, Tara Dower fourth. I've got Sarah Buell third. So talking about Tara for a second, I think if you isolate this race for her, if this was like a focus race, I think I would put her higher. But in the context of a pretty competitive field and just the load that she's taken on over the course of 2023, I've got her fourth. Sarah Buell, I see third place for her as a huge step forward on the national scene. She's obviously had great results at JFK in the past. But I like that she's made this commitment to moving out west and getting more specific in her training, her environment, which is awesome. I think she's a fantastic runner. I think she gets third. For me, though, my top two are all part of this narrative that Brett kind of talked about, which is Western States redemption, I think we can call it. I think we all expected last year that Riley Brady and Heather Jackson could have great days on that course. Didn't quite work out for them. So this, to me, is the first step in them getting back. I've got Heather Jackson in second. I think she's such a great competitor. And I've got Riley Brady winning this thing. I think they're ready to do it. And I want to see him back. And I agree with you, Brett, that Camille's course record is amazing. And I don't see that being taken down this year. Maybe not even anytime soon. It's impressive. But yeah, that's my top five. Leah, what do you think?
No, I like those. And mine aren't terribly different. The only thing is I was pretty conflicted on my five and six. And I think I did the same thing last year. I'm just going to do my tie for 5/6. And I think this speaks to both of their consistencies in races this past year. And they've actually signed up for a lot of very same races and seem to have like similar trajectories and want to have similar trajectories in the sport. And that's Tara Dower and Shea Ocolano. I think one of those two will be fifth. Not sure which one. We'll see next week. Fourth, I've got Steph Flippin. Third, Heather Jackson. I think we'll see her race similarly to last year, which I love her racing style. I mean, she had 15 minutes on Riley on the first lap. And then we saw Riley end up beating Heather by about close to an hour, I believe. I don't think that same thing's going to happen this year by any means, but it's cool to see how Heather races, like full confidence and where she's at and what she's doing. And like you guys mentioned, I think she's learned so much this year. And I love her commitment to improving and trying to figure out ways that she can improve. I know she's sought out mentors in the sport in like Devin Yanko. And like what better person to have mentorship than Devin, who's been around the sport forever, has knowledge with Javelina and has a ton of experience herself running the fastest races at Javelina. So I think getting mentorship in that way, like she said on your podcast today, Finn, trying to improve what she thinks is like not her strengths, which is technical downhills and like the way she can do that. So I love that she's a student of the sport, despite only being in the sport for 1 year. So I think we're going to keep seeing Heather get better and better and nail each race a little bit more each time, which I'm super excited about. Finn.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I got Ragna in second. You brought up a great point, Brett. Like, we haven't seen Ragna race this style of race very often, but I think she's got it in her. I think that 17:41 at Western States in a hot year against some world-class competition, I think she'll hold her own, except to Riley. I think Riley will run a very well-paced race. Probably won't be somebody we see in the lead immediately on that first or second loop, but I believe that they'll pace super smart, move their way up, and this might be Riley overtaking somebody on the fifth lap, which I think will make my job as a live streamer very exciting.
Leah, if you had to make a prediction, how fast will this women's field top five be?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we're going to see a course record being broken. I do think we'll see at least a 14:30 run, which is 8:42 pace, which is fast and would probably be a top two or three fastest time ever. So I think we'll see that.
Yeah. The weather's trending decent for next weekend. I think right now it says, what did I write down? Low of 82, sunny, 1% chance of rain.
Ooh.
Exclamation mark. That's what I wrote down in my notes. Yeah. So 1% chance.
Cool. Should we get to the men's field?
Let's do it.
Thanks to Oladance for sponsoring this show. Oladance makes wireless Bluetooth headphones delivering 19 hours of battery life, superior sound, the ability to still safely hear your surroundings, and an open-ear design so you can wear them for long periods of time without developing ear pain. If you're interested, head over to oladance.com/ST and use code ST at checkout, ST is in all caps, for $30 off their OWS2 headphones. Also, thanks to Brooks for sponsoring this show. As you probably know by now, I first started using their products, especially the Cascadia 8, way back in 2014 during a thru hike of the Appalachian Trail. Fast forward to 2023, and they have a new and improved Cascadia 17 shoe that I've put now over 80 miles on, and a High Point clothing collection that merges great performance and style. Check it all out over at brooksrunning.com/singletrack. And with that, let's get back to the show. All right, I got to kick off this with another joke again, similar to the Marshawn Lynch thing, but like, do we have anyone bringing that 2016 pre-Western States check-in, no, I will not be bringing a headlamp with me, Jim Walmsley type energy in this year's race in the men's field? What do you think, Brett?
No, I don't think so. Not that kind of energy, but someone who appears to be bringing a lot of energy to the race is Preston Cates. I thought his interview with you was awesome. I'm a huge Preston Cates fan now. just had some really good one-liners. This is his debut at 100 miles, but a little bit more digging though. I mean, so he's only a couple years into the ultra scene, really. Because what was it, the 2021 Canyons 100K, where he just like went for it to see where he stacked up? I think that's what he said. Preston has a sub 30 10K PR to his name, actually. So he's got a little bit of speed, some running talent in those legs. Moved to Flagstaff, pursuing running full time. Seems like he's got his head on straight. I could see a potential like really solid debut 100 mile coming out of Preston. Leah, we saw him race at Lake Sonoma, and like, a sample size of one there, but like, he's one of those people that he crossed the finish line and like the energy levels were at zero. Like, he looked like it was on the brink of death at the finish of the race.
Yeah, that's actually like something I have written in my notes, is the couple times that I've seen him race, or like Mike has seen him race in the same race that I'm racing. It's just like, we've gotten word of Preston like going to the well and being like a complete zombie by the end, which fares well in like 50K, not well, but it fares better in 50K, 50 mile races. And honestly, it's Preston's ability to go to the well that makes me pretty interested to see what happens at Javelina whenever you're not just have like doing that for a 4 hour, like 7 hour race. This is going to be 13 hours. So like, will he fare over the distance?
Yeah, I got to be a little patient those first few laps before getting into zombie mode.
I think you could sell a shirt that says Central Governor Overrider.
Yeah, so many people will understand that one. I'd buy one.
I would too.
Finn, who do you got? Who are some of your names on this men's field list?
I think just for kicks, I'll start with a relative random baller. So Dan Green.
Ooh, we got the same one.
Yep, Dan Green. Dan Green, not Dan Jones, but Dan Green. Yeah, Dan Green is coached by Caleb Bowen, who, Leah, you might have met at Grindstone earlier this fall. I chatted with Caleb over DMs, and turns out Caleb actually coaches Dan, and Caleb says that Dan is or has been fitter this fall than Caleb has been, and Caleb was one of the two guys that took golden tickets at Grindstone. So, yeah, Caleb says it's just a matter of focus and execution, and the talent is there, end quote. So I thought that was interesting. Like, we've seen Dan's name, I think, on a couple of these bigger stage races, the entrance list, the results lists. I think he might have had a pretty good day at Black Canyon earlier this year, like a top 10, 12th, okay. So just outside the top 10, but, you know, allegedly the talent is there for a pretty good day. Other random baller that I wanted to bring up is Blake Slattengren. So I did like this round table interview with a bunch of these guys, and not Blake, but Joe McConaughey, who he trains with in Seattle, said that Blake dropped Joe in a recent key long run workout. So that's a bit of intel. Blake is otherwise like an extremely humble guy, soft-spoken, just like a crusher. And this would be his first national class, national stage race. So just wanted to give those two guys some love. One other random baller, and Leah, I feel like Mike might appreciate this one because it involves a Massanutten in reference, but Paul Jacobs, this guy is in his mid-40s, and he ran, I believe, the second fastest time ever at Massanutten last year. This was faster than the year Carl, you know, was on that like 100-miler winning rampage back in 06 when he won like six or seven of them. Anyways, Paul did this at 44 years old. It was like 1740X his finish time. He's also won the Zion 100K, top 10 at JFK. He's won the Grindstone 100. So kind of like in that Ragnar Dabots category of older athletes that are still crushing it.
And he just got fourth place at Grindstone 100K. So just behind Justin Grunewald. So he's one of those guys that's coming back after Grindstone, which honestly I was pretty surprised by. But yeah, I think in my notes I have written that he's has wins at just about every East Coast classic race you can think of. I believe he lives around like the Bethesda, Maryland area and has a 1344 100 miler at Canal Corridor to his name. So he seems pretty solid. I'm excited to see him race at Javelina because I don't think he's really done much out west.
One big name that I want to say, and then I'll turn it over to you guys, is John Ray. I think if it hasn't been declared already, I feel like he's a national class, borderline, world-class type American runner these days. Went back to his fourth place CCC Strava report earlier today, and he made a really interesting comparison. He says something like, you know, in the same way we thought about Zach Miller and Drew Holman and Puma sort of banding together at Worlds to work together and to hold those mid top 10 spots in Innsbruck, he sort of felt something similar about himself and Dakota and Seth Ruling sort of holding that mid top 10 American contingent together at CCC. And in that comparison, in that sort of like equally awesome world-class performance hasn't been appreciated yet in the media. So we're doing it now. But anyways, my only concern with him is whether, you know, this is too soon post world-class performance at CCC for him to kind of like hit another one out of the park. But then I look at his training, which has been super solid and in the last couple weeks have been pretty Javelina specific. And he's historically a pretty heavy workload guy, likes to dabble with, you know, interesting workout approaches in long run combos. So I'm excited for him. Hard to bet against him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, we saw him with a really, really solid second place finish at Javelina last year. And what's the third fastest time running 13:05? A question that I've had on my mind regarding John is like, did he have this race at Javelina last year because of Dakota? And given that, like, is there anybody in the field that would pull him to a race like that again this year, or will he do the pulling? Because I do think he gets the best out of him, it seems, when he's doing a decent amount of chasing. So if he's leading the race, I'm just curious how that will play out for him in a race like Javelina. I think what Brett, you mentioned earlier, like if we were to look at some of those top guys and look at their splits on laps 3, 4, and 5, his were great, like 234, yeah. 237, 240. So within a 6 minute range, which is, I think that's how you're winning and or you're getting a golden ticket racing with splits like that on your laps 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, absolutely. What's a better result, John Rea's 2022 Javelina or his fourth place at CCC? Both of them were just a little bit behind Dakota. Which one's better?
I think they're on par.
I couldn't tell. Like, fourth at CCC is definitely a bigger stage.
Yeah.
So, like, I lean towards that. But, like, you know, 13.05 at Javelina is pretty damn good. Training has been, like, pretty classic Johnny Rea, you know. Some big old monster size runs there. It seems like he bounced back really quickly from CCC. So I very much put him in the category as like the one to beat kind of person.
Yeah. I liked his 1 weekend of training, which was a 20 miler with a workout in it of 8x1 mile, followed by a 40 miler at 7:20 pace the next day.
I think it was titled laps 2 and 3 or something like that.
And then he said he was going to save lap 4 and 5 for the actual race, which is cool to see that he's leaving something in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Leah, I thought you made a really good point about the pulling effect, and maybe this is a bold prediction, but I really feel like if you look at Matt Daniels, you look at Ryan Miller, they are two of the most naturally talented runners in our sport. Without a doubt, they have the ability to confidently lead this race from the gun and possibly hold it. I mean, there's a little bit of a question mark to that, but they could be the two guys that that John keys off of for a lot of the race. And if they have a good day and John's there, I think it could be a similar scenario to last year.
Yeah, I can't help but feel so similarly about Matt Daniels and Ryan Miller every time we do a race preview. It's like the potential is so high for those guys. And like they've had those beautiful races where it's all come together. And I think Ryan most recently at the Kauai 50 miler just seems like he executed a really great day on a hot day, fast 50 mile course in Hawaii where he got a big payday as well, $15,000.
Yeah.
And I think for him, he's probably feeling like those days where he gets to put it all together in such a perfect way are few and far between. But I really hope Javelina is one of those. It's so easy to be a Ryan Miller fan. He's just a great person and exudes so much energy whenever he's racing and supporting other people out there. So yeah, him and Matt Daniels, I just feel so similarly about that, like the raw speed, the raw talent. It's just all about getting the race to go your way and putting all the pieces together that I think stumps both of them from time to time.
Yeah, I had a lot of similar notes written down, like winning the Kauai 50. I mean, that's a pretty nice tune-up race for something like Javelina. It's just like the weather conditions were worse. I mean, hot,
humid,
and just so humid. And the sun over there in Hawaii, it's worse than in Arizona. And it looks like he's like bounced back from that really well and like had some super solid weeks of training. Matt, I listened to his interview with Joe Corcione on the Old Everyday Ultra podcast. And that one was super interesting where he was like, did UTMB very much just experience like training for a big mountainous 100 mile, like learn how to use poles, et cetera. And then 30 hours go by and like he takes a week off and then starts running. He's like, I feel amazing. Like it was like, it like flipped something in like a switch. And he says, he's just like felt so much better since UTMB than before it. I don't know how that works, but that's really cool to hear because, you know, again, like Matt's another one of those people that's like really easy to root for. And, you know, on paper, this is like Javelina 100 mile. Like that's like, that's his course. You know, I mean, he's so quick. I mean, yeah, it just seems like that's one of the courses where he should just be able to click off like 7:30s forever. I had him in a category. Well, I've got like some like, I don't know, they're like Venn diagram type categories, but I had like my speedy people, which were like, you know, you have your Ryan Miller, Matt Daniels, but then I also have my speedy people who are debuting at 100 miles, which is Preston, Ryan Raff, Blake Slattengren, like definitely Ryan Raff and Preston for the speedy side. I mean, Ryan Raff, like his 10K PR is from a cross country course and it's 28:06. I mean, he might be like, that's like legit one of the fastest people to ever be running an ultra. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like to date so far that hasn't quite converted over to ultras yet. Like he won his first ultra, which was the Eldon Crest 34 during Cocodona week. But he's had a couple of the results. I feel like he's still finding his trail legs, still figuring that out. But this is a really interesting 100-mile debut. I'm super curious to see what Ryan does, and like maybe it is more like a runnable 100-miler. That's his thing, or who knows? Maybe then it's just next year go like Golden Trail sort of stuff. Yeah, and then
okay, 28:06 on a cross country course though, that bears repeating. That's amazing.
Yeah, because I initially had written down 28:56 as his 10K PR because that was on a track, but then his fifth year at NAU in cross, it was like NCAA regionals. He just like full on balled out. 28 is yeah, it's stupid fast. So yeah, that was kind of like my speedy group. And then there's kind of like your 100-mile veterans. You know, we've got Zach Bitter. I think I'm putting Ryan Montgomery into this 100-mile veteran list now, especially with Javelina. You know, Ryan's got great history at Javelina. Interestingly though, I mean, Ryan got seventh at Western States, so he already has an auto in for states. So that is kind of an interesting X factor when considering the golden ticket type chase. I mean, we're like really splitting here. But like if Ryan decides to go for like a 12:30, would anyone go with him? Because it's like, well, no, now second place is the new first place. I don't know. Zach Bitter has been interesting. On paper, like looking at Zach Strava, Zach Bitter is so fit right now. He's looking like his training looks like old Zach Bitter. Really curious to see if, I mean, I feel like it's been a few years since he's had one of those like historic performances. But like training wise, it looks like everything's pointing towards that. What do you think?
I'd say so. I mean, I guess we should note he's coming back from a sacral stress fracture, I believe this past like May or June. But I believe he was saying either on Twitter or Instagram, just like his combination of mobility, strength training with his current mileage, that he's feeling just as fit as he's ever felt. And Zach Bitter has, I'm just taking a guess here, and I think I'm probably accurate in saying this, the fastest 100 miler of any guy in this field in the 12s. Yeah. What's his treadmill one? That's really fast too.
In the 11s, I think.
In the 11s,
I think
it was sub 12, yeah. So I think if he's feeling that way about his own fitness, that's probably a good sign. But like you mentioned, Brad, it's been a couple years since we've seen like the Zach Bitter of Zach Bitters come to a start line and like execute in that way. So I'm rooting for him, and I hope he has a great day because it seems like he came back from his injury quite well. Better than most, honestly, and seems like quite fast. So hoping his body can stay one piece out there too.
Where do we categorize Joe McConaughey?
Oh, he's like
the circle surrounding the Venn diagrams.
Yeah. I don't even know what category goes in, because one of my notes about him is like, because of his success in the longer races and the success in the FKT world, it's so easy to forget that Joe is really fast. And I don't want people to forget that, because he is. And I think he's shown that in the way he's been able to be competitive at a lot of these races. He's missed out on a golden ticket so many times.
I think this is
this is his sixth attempt at a golden ticket. And his closest was Bandera back in 2022, where he missed it by 2 minutes. So we know he's chasing that golden ticket. I'm like on Team Joe. My mom is on Team Joe. My mom is the biggest string bean fan. Any race that I'm part of, she's like, she texts me. She's like, oh, is string bean running? And I'm like, oh, not this one, mom, but at Javelina. And she's like, okay, I'll tune in then. So, I mean, I feel like he's a really easy guy to cheer for. He even got the moms on board. So I don't know. He's been doing several 90-ish mile weeks. Oh, I think he's being coached by like Connor Holt.
I think Connor.
And Camille.
Yeah, coaching Joe.
Yeah, which is super interesting. You don't hear about a ton of people being coached by them. So that's really cool to see. And I think that's a newer thing, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was pretty new, like 2023. I think they had started working together before. Was it Joe ran Bandera this year and hurt his Achilles? Or maybe they started working together after the Achilles injury. I can't remember. It was right around then. But yeah, looking at Joe's training on Strava, you would have no idea that his last ultra sign-up result was a win at Cocodona.
No,
it looks very much like he's approaching Javelina from like that of a marathoner, because he's been like doing a big threshold workout or like reps on the track every Tuesday, Wednesday, and then like one solid long run on the weekend. It's like a very, very bread and butter kind of structured block.
Yeah, he did the JMT FKT there, and then the Barkley got a fun run, and then I believe a DNF at Bandera as well. Not quite in that order, but sort of that's been in the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just this past year. Yeah. Yeah. So I do think his Achilles is his actual Achilles heel in races. So like, I hope it stays together and like feeling good for him out there, because I think I was reading his post Bandera race report, and I believe he had moved into fourth place whenever that started acting up, and he races his way up. So I did write a note here, and like, maybe I'll go back on this note, but I do feel like he and Ryan Montgomery race similarly. And maybe I'm saying that because they spent a lot of Bandera this year around each other before they both were eventual DNFs. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Joe around Ryan at some point, kind of moving their way up a little bit in the later half of the race.
Yeah. And then I would be remiss if I didn't add Hal Koerner to our preview, because he has the most wins at this race, I think, of anyone starting. I think he's won three Javelinas.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah. Because, yeah, and this is the first 100-mile that he's attempting in quite some time. And yeah, he's actually been running a decent amount. So, and Hal's a gamer too. You know, if his body can just cooperate with him, like, yeah, he's like the most competitive person I think I've ever met, just from a purely racing standpoint. So I'm really curious to see what Hal does. And then like, shouts to our 200-mile dogs, Michael Versteeg and Jeff Garmeyer, who are signed up for the race. Is Michael Versteeg going to run? I assume so. I mean, he ran Kodiak like last week, but that's fine.
I feel like that's just in line with what he does.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had one additional shout out is, as I was scrolling down, I saw Steven Cornelius is signed up. So Steven Cornelius, our Run Rabbit Run guy that moved out to Run Rabbit course to just train on it and go for it this year, and didn't quite pan out, but maybe we'll see some success here at Javelina.
One thing I'll add is, I'll talk about Ryan Montgomery for a second. I think one of my predictions for how this race is dictated is based on Ryan Montgomery. I was talking with him a couple of days ago. Sounds like he does want to run under 13 hours here. I think he does want to go for the course record. I think he's very fit.
No pressure for him. Because he's already in Western States. Like, that's what I mean.
And no pressure. No pressure. Because, right, he's in Western States. Yeah, I think he's done a pretty darn good job of spacing out his racing since Western. You're totally right. The nothing to lose element is a powerful mental state to wield. And he's so freaking tough. I mean, you know, Brett, you and I saw him at Michigan Bluff last year. He was in the chair, looked like he was in a lot of pain, looked like could be the end of the day to an untrained eye. But yeah, still rallied back to get well inside the top 10. So at the very least, I think he will be doing a lot of the dictating of the pace of the race early on. That's my guess. And I think that's cool. It's fun to watch.
That's a good point. And I remember, I think as one of you guys or Mike had a good story about Ryan at Michigan Bluff, just like knowing himself extremely well and like telling his crew, like, guys, I need a minute, and like pretty much like leave me alone and let me have my minute to kind of sulk in how I feel right now. But then after I do my sulking, I'll be ready to go. So I think it takes a decent amount of wherewithal to know yourself that well, that late in a race, and to be able to know that you need this minute to compose yourself so you can go execute the way that you want to execute. And like, to some degree, I would say that gives Ryan some resurrection points with probably how he looked in that moment and then how he went on to perform later on at Western States. I will add, he had a 232 marathon in his build to Javelina this year, and I believe it wasn't a perfect day for him. I think he was shooting more along the lines of like a 229, 230. So I think he's been working on the speed, and that definitely shows with a race like that. But Ryan's a guy that doesn't go excessive with the training. He and I have had lots of chats about this, like even before Western States this year. And like, he's been around 100 miles for 4 weeks and like not a ton of hours, just getting it done, staying solid, staying consistent, and just staying healthy, which I think is what he needs to do to get to the start line and then also potentially go sub 13 at the finish line.
I'll add my non-pick predictions here. The first one is a bit of an homage to Mike McMonagle, who said after Black Canyon that we just witnessed a major increase in the professionalism of the sport. I think we're going to see something similar at Javelina. My big prediction is that the entire men's top five goes under 13:10, and I think the entire men's top 10 goes under 14 hours. Those are my two big overall time predictions, and I think it's because of the depth of the field and just like the types of runners we're seeing. Like, I know in every single race there's the worry, and Leah, you've talked about this and I totally agree, the whole like X percentage get carried away and they blow up, but I think we're going to see a whole lot of runners hang on. Could be an anomaly year, but I think it's going to get done. And I do think what we're going to take from it though is like, it's going to be another watershed, this is how much more pro our sport is now moment. And so those are my two.
Totally. That's a great point. And like, so last year at Javelina, we saw easily the fastest women's top 10 that we've ever seen in that race. Mm-hmm. I think the 10th time was Arden Young in about 16:34. Like 16:30 would have been like third or fourth place the year prior. So yeah. I think we're seeing, like we say this every single preview we do, like the sport's getting so fast. I honestly don't think we'll see the top 10 on the women's side be as fast as it was last year. I think we had a really deep year last year. I was doing this preview, I think I'm looking at roughly 10 names again that I'm like, these are solid, but we're going to see a little bit of carnage. We might see a DNF or two, some people's days that don't go quite as planned. So I don't think we'll see quite as fast as the top 10 that we did last year. However, I think we'll see some fast podium times on both sides.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up my 2022 preview, but I can't find it right now. I feel like the fields are somewhat similar in terms of quality to last year. What do you think?
I think on the men's side, yes. I think it's similar on the women's side too. I just think it was a little deeper. Like, we had a few more names. Like,
there's a little more experience last year.
Totally. I think top end quality, yes. Like sub elites, kind of, yes. But I think we had a few more names that went a little deeper last year.
Yeah, on the women's side. I think that's fair. That's a fair
men,
assessment.
I think, were pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brett, I know you are going to abstain from picks, but do you have any final thoughts on the men's field before Leah?
I don't think we're going to see five under 13:10. I don't think there's enough bodies Mm-mm. for that. I think we would need like double this field size to get that. Cause I think there will absolutely be more than five people who try, but mm-hmm. you know, half those people are going to explode. You know, that'd be nuts if I'm wrong and we just had like of these people, which, you know, I think if one of them would have to be a debut 100, I think, to hit a sub 13:10, which could happen. I feel like of the debuts, if someone's going to do that, it's probably Preston. But that would be like a shocking result. That would be like one of the best debut 100s of all time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Brett, that inspired this thought that there should be some sort of measurement for overall race field resilience. So, for example, if you look at like all the historic races in our sport where there were relatively deep fields, which ones did the best job of keeping it together with, you know, lowest number of DNFs, lowest number of like, you know, top contenders finishing 30th or 50th, like way out of it. I think that would be a really cool stat to find out, because there's always talk of carnage, but The question is how much and relative to what? Like, what's the benchmark?
Yeah. I don't know if Javelina is the race that wins that stat. Mm-hmm. Last year, there was a lot of dropouts last year. Mm-hmm. A lot of early blowups because, you know, like you run in 7 minute pace for that first lap, you run in 7 minute pace in the second lap, all of a sudden now it's hot and like it'll either shock your system or it won't. And like half the people, it seemed like it shocked their system. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, there was like carnage in chairs. But for those who kept going, it all led to super fast times. I guess kind of like you had said too, Finn, it's like if the people who won the races were just simply the people who were the fittest ones on the start line, these previews would be really boring. But there's a lot more variables than that because of all those things like race day nerves, your stomach, the heat, just pacing, you know, crew knowledge and, you know, how well that goes through. Yeah, it'll be an exciting race. It'll be a fun day in the desert for sure.
Leah, do you want to list your picks first or should I go first?
Oh, you go first.
So I'm going to add a massive caveat here. And for those that don't know, I am pacing Brett for the second year in a row on lap four. And for the record, when we hop on lap four, we're hunting for a golden ticket. It's all business. I firmly believe we're getting it done. I think we're winning this thing. So this is my alternate reality top five.
You're going to give two top fives.
Oh man.
Alternate reality top five. Five is Ryan Montgomery, four Preston Cates, three Matt Daniels, two Ryan Miller, one John Ray. So to debrief all that, I would say, you know, of that top five, it's running high on emotion, very high on talent, maybe not on the prudent side of things. I did feel like I had to list this particular top five to hold true to that prediction of five guys under 13:10. I think all five of these guys can do it. Of the five, I probably have the most confidence in John Ray. I think he's a rising, arrived star. I think a lot like you, Leah, a lot like you, Brett, he's a planner, pretty logistical, looks strong right now. Looks like he has absorbed CCC. Based on Strava indications, he's already had success here. And then I think similar to Riley and Heather, I think he really wants badly another crack at Western States, wants the ticket. So yeah, this is my complete roll of the dice, high risk, high reward, top five. But in real life, I got Brett Hornig winning this thing. He's winning this thing. He's getting the golden ticket. Brett's going Western.
Dude, if that happens, that's coming with like a 5:30 last mile because it's like a massive kick at the end.
That's fun. Let's see here. I will start with my number five. So I've got Preston Cates fifth, largely due to the fact like I think he'll be in that lead group early on. I think we'll see similar to like his way too cool Lake Sonoma zombie status towards the end, and he'll do the micro fade, maybe macro fade. We'll see. Maybe macro fade for fifth place. Fourth, sadly, sorry, Mom, we got String Bean. I think he's going to miss out on a ticket by one spot once again. Have lots of faith in him though. I think he'll run a great race and I think we'll see him inching a little bit closer to that golden ticket status each race. Third, I've got Brett Hornig. Yeah, this is funny. Brett and I were having a text conversation about a month ago, a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, hey, it doesn't look like Javelina's that competitive. Like, this is looking good. And then we're like, oh, shit, John Ray signed up. And then I started looking. Then we started, like, texting each other different names back and forth. And then I was like, God damn it, it actually is pretty competitive. But then I told him all he's got to do is let John Ray and Ryan Montgomery in front of him, and he's got a golden ticket. So I got Ryan Montgomery in second and then John Ray winning it because he's hard to beat against, to bet against right now.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
Leah, are you running Western States next year?
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know. I've been asking myself the same question for like months now.
Well, we'll see. If I get a golden ticket, I challenge you to Western States.
Can because we do the
I need to beat you there
again?
Sure, but I have to beat you at Western States.
So well, that's... I was a no to Western States, and then Caleb got his golden ticket to Western States, and I was like, well, shoot, now I need to do Western States. So yeah. I'm back on the Western States train this week.
Yeah, if I get a golden ticket.
If you get a golden ticket, I will definitely.
You cannot dodge. You can't dodge me at Western States.
It's, I will 100%
it's going down there.
Agree to this right now. If you get a golden ticket, I will run Western States next year.
If you guys all run Western States, I will go buy a Western States sponsor spot and run.
You'll actually complete a training block and run CIM if we both decide to run Western States.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the deal.
That's the deal.
This has been awesome, guys. Super fun. I'm stoked for this race. Leah, I didn't realize this was your first Javelina. I'm even more stoked now.
I'm so excited. Might do some Grand Canyon running the day prior, so it'll be fun.
The crew is going to be in town.
Coming in hot.
Any final thoughts, Brett, before we go?
Okay. Over, under 20 minutes in a car after the race before I throw up. Finn, what do you think?
I mean, you made it last year, right?
I think I made it I made it to that McDonald's parking lot.
Well, who's driving? Is Finn driving?
Finn is driving, but it's a straight line. It doesn't even matter.
You're taking the under. I'm taking the under. This is going to be an even breakthrough race for you.
Yeah, I think you're going to throw up all those ketones less than 10 minutes after you finish.
It'll be the most focused throw up ever.
How expensive is your throw up going to be? Yeah.
No, okay. I'll go. Dude, we got to save that throw up.
We got to save that
throw up. That's $90 a throw up right there.